The Google Podcast app is going away in April. Right now, I want you to take a look at the podcast app you're using right now. Maybe it's time for a new one. Check out podcastapps.com and try a new one for free right now. That's podcastapps.com.
Hi, friends. It's Carrie Dahl. Thank you so much for venturing into the inner circle with me. If you subscribe to my podcast and have been listening for a while, thank you. I appreciate you. If you're new, welcome to my circle, where the power of story is honored and I believe all voices need and deserve to be heard. As a former news anchor turned podcast host and public speaking coach, I know that stories are the most powerful way we connect as human beings. I feel privileged so many of you trust me with your stories, whether in my private Inner Circle Facebook group or right here on my podcast. Your story is your gift. Thank you for allowing me to share it with the world. I'm going to begin today with a few statistics, which normally I don't do, but these numbers tell an important story. And they give perspective to today's topic, the female CEO. In 2021, the number of women running businesses on the Fortune 500 in America hit an all-time record, 41. Also, for the first time, two Black women are running Fortune 500 businesses. And while these achievements are exciting, they're only part of the story. Having a total of 41 women chief executives amounts to female leadership for just over 8% of the Fortune 500. In Canada, data analysis of top executives at Canada's largest publicly traded corporations shows just 4% of companies have a female chief executive officer. That equates to 9 women in the role out of 223 companies, and those stats are up to date as of January 2021. So I ask you, how do we view these numbers? Through the lens of optimism because there is exciting growth for women in this area? Or do we temper that enthusiasm and say, we got a long way to go? My guest today will shed valuable insight in this area. She is a powerhouse CEO and knows what it takes to hold your own in any boardroom and any situation. To date, she has never sat across from another female while negotiating a deal. She had to work hard. She will tell you probably 5 times as hard as men just to prove herself. But it served her. It motivated her success and her desire to see things change. Her business career began when she was just a little kid. Her dad was an entrepreneur running the family business, and she loved going to the office with him. She wanted to learn how things worked. She had her own cubicle at the office and she negotiated her own paycheck. She would attend meetings with her dad, and the fireworks she witnessed in some of those meetings fed her soul. She loved the art of negotiation. And get this, she loved writing proposals and would do so for the right to redecorate her room. I mean, I just digress for a second. To this day, writing proposals for me is the death of me. Like, clearly, I missed out on that excitement. Anyway, she embraced any stage she was exposed to. She remembers going to huge conventions with her family when she was super little and then emceeing them. She is a member of Young Presidents Organization, better known as YPO, a powerful entrepreneurial club. She joined a chapter in the United States, and she and another woman were the only females in their chapter. Her name is Blair Dorsey. She is a lawyer by trade and a fierce entrepreneur. Her company, The Dream Junction, is the brainchild of 6 family members, with Blair leading the way as CEO. The Dream Junction grew from an idea to a multi-million dollar company within a few short years. Today, the Dream Junction does digital printing on textiles for some of the world's largest e-commerce and brick-and-mortar stores. Chances are, if you have brought a t-shirt from a Facebook link or a design your own site, the Dream Junction was behind the scenes doing both the printing and the fulfillment of that order. With the internal need to constantly improve, innovate, and disrupt, I love that,
Blair founded another company in 2016 that revolutionized the direct-to-garment printing industry with the invention of the Ovaljet printer. The Ovaljet is now powering the Dream Junction and has been the belle of the ball at printing and textile conventions worldwide. While Blair clearly loves business, her heart will forever belong to her children, Hartley, Holden, and Cannon, and of course her husband, Donovan. They also work together. The last 2 years, however, have been a very interesting journey for her, filled with all kinds of change, but I will let her speak to that. Friends, I've wanted to do a podcast with her for a number of years now, so I am so thrilled that the one and only amazing Blair Dorsey is finally venturing into the inner circle with me. Welcome, my friend.
Goodness. Thank you, Carrie. I'm a huge super fan of the inner circle, so I knew there would be some sort of introduction, but had no idea that you'd go on and on like that. So I'm very humbled by that. Thank you.
Oh, I mean, I am so thrilled that you're sitting across from me, and I love the fact that you call yourself a super fan of the inner circle, and you truly are. Your support is overwhelming, and what you remember and your takeaways. So for all of you listening, for any of you who have been interviewed by me and shared your story with me, Blair likely knows all of those details. You know, I want to begin here because I began with that bit of a rhetorical question asking, you know, our listeners to think about, have we achieved success or do we have a long way to go? Do we approach these numbers of female CEOs with optimism, or we need to grow? I am curious for your perspective on that. Let's begin there.
I think it's both. I think we can celebrate any achievement, and I think we can recognize that there's definitely a long way to go. I've certainly, from YPO, gone from seeing just, you know, two women in chapters to now I'm in a chapter where I believe we're at 40% female, and the numbers keep continuing to grow. An organization that used to be more of a boys club is now having huge initiatives to get more women into the field. So I think that through more and more women leaderships and more mentoring programs mm-hmm. and all of that, I think we're heading in the right direction. I don't think we're quite there yet.
Yeah, okay. That's great perspective. We're going to dig into YPO a little bit later, but I always like to start with your childhood because I was fascinated when we did the pre-interview about you saying that, you know, the roots for entrepreneurialism were planted at such a young age. Like, you had your own cubicle at the office. Like, take me back there and explain to me what that was like.
I did. So my dad is an incredible visionary and an amazing entrepreneur. And we were always very included in anything that he did. He founded a company called Money Mailer, and it was a direct coupon company before anyone was doing all of that. But I would go to work with him when I wasn't either going to school with my grandmother or, you know, if I had any days off or over the summer. It was amazing. He would just open all the doors and he would say, you know, to his legal department, you know, Blair has questions for you. Go sit with her for whatever. Or if there was a budgeting meeting, I could go in that. I would have different businesses every week that I would go around these poor people. I'd knock on their office doors selling whatever I could figure out how to make, whether it was jewelry or I would take his expired coupons. There was a warehouse that was huge, and flip them over and make pads of paper out of those and go around selling them. And my dad, he got this quote from his dad, was, if you can make the most money shoveling shit, you'd be a shit shoveler. So that was, you know, kind of what I heard growing up. And you do what you have to do to provide the lifestyle that you want. And it was really an incredible way of growing up.
How old were you at this time?
Oh gosh, ever since I can remember. So right. He founded it before I was born. And then I remember being 5, 6, going into the office. And if there was a woman who was pregnant there, I would help organize her baby shower. I would have like spirit days in the office and tell everyone to wear red, white, and blue, which was their colors. So it was great. It was really fun to be around.
So home then, this was happening, is it Orange County?
Yes.
California.
Yes.
Born and raised.
Born and raised.
And there you are, 4 or 5, starting businesses. planning all sorts of events like that. The seeds for your future were planted at such a young age. And I think one of the things I pick up on was your dad just opened doors, just exposed you to it to see where you would take it.
Absolutely. I remember one of the companies that wanted to do advertising with him was some sort of childhood video learning deal. And I remember the guy who was tasked with marketing this saying, Blair, I want you to go home and I want you to watch these and I want you to write up a report if you thought it was good or not and the highs and lows and all this. I remember being so little and just learning how to do a typewriter and trying to write up this report on what I thought were the benefits of this program.
Would you then go and present it to them?
Oh, absolutely.
So that too is where the seeds for public speaking and, you know, MC work. You were so little when you MC'd that conference. You had no fear.
No.
It was your normal.
Yeah, he had an annual convention every year. And I loved getting up and welcoming everyone and thanking them for coming. And I remember being really little and, you know, singing all night at the top of my lungs on the stage and dancing with everyone. And it was really great. It was really like a family. And we still are close with a lot of people to this day.
I am blessed to know both your mom and your dad, two phenomenal human beings. They really had a big impact on you, as did your grandfather and your grandmother.
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
So my mom is an earthly angel. She's amazing. Her background is in therapy, and she has her doctorate in holistic health, and she's just brilliant. She loves learning. She's now our family, you know, therapist, because she's talking to everyone every day and making sure everyone's all right. But she's incredible. There was never anything growing up that I ever thought I couldn't do. If I was interested in something, it was, you know, let's get someone to show you how to do it. Let's build it for you. Let's encourage this. Like, I could do anything. And I've always kind of thought that whatever I put my mind to, I could do.
The possibilities are endless. That was from the encouragement of them.
Absolutely.
Not saying, well, I don't know. And instead, did they say, yes, you can, Blair?
Oh, absolutely. There were never doors that were closed, ever. I always thought that I could do anything. And going back to the difference between like men and women in business, looking back, there weren't a lot of women in business or, you know, necessarily that even worked with my dad. But I never felt off about it. It was me being taught by my dad about business was never, well, you're a female, so this is going to be harder. Mm-hmm. It was, being a woman was never a hindrance, taught to me as being a hindrance. It was just, you can do anything that you put your mind to.
So you used to go to school with your grandmother. She was a teacher, but grandpa laid some seeds for law in your life.
Yes, he certainly did. So my grandfather is another brilliant man in our family, and he went to Hastings Law School, had a huge degree in contracting and construction, and then doing mediation and lots of legal work later. So my grandfather would teach me about law ever since I was little. He had beautiful law books in his office. And then growing up and after school, I knew I wanted to go to law school. And my grandfather would come with me a lot of the days. And there were days where we would get like a pop quiz and the professor would say, well, Buzz, are you going to take this one too? And he would take the exam right with us. And then studying for the bar, I don't know what I would have done without him. I'd call him and say, I don't remember, you know, adverse possession. What's that, you know, little trick that you told me about this or whatever it was, he would help me.
Blair, why law and not business?
So I think that law is just a really amazing background for anything that you want to do. I mean, I think that everyone should go to some version of law school, even just to know their own rights and how things work in our system.
Okay, so you took the easy road into law school. Of course, I say that tongue in cheek, like that's as hard as it gets when it comes to school. Wasn't it just an unbelievable amount of studying and time that you had to put in and then the bar exam?
It was. I think so. Going into law school, I was back in Orange County. I went to undergrad in LA, back in Orange County with my family. And my deal was I was never going to miss a family birthday. I was never going to miss, you know, important events, but I was going to work my butt off. So It was difficult, but we had a blast. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I went to Chapman Law School, small school with incredible one-on-one attention, and I loved it. I loved every minute of it.
Okay, take me to the day where your results from the bar exam came in. I love this story.
So going back to me always thinking that I could do whatever I put my mind to, I did this bar passage program that they said, if you come every day, you do the work, you are guaranteed you are going to pass the bar, and you're a bar warrior. So that's just what I thought. I showed up every day and I knew that I was going to pass the bar. So I had a party on the day that the bar results were coming out, where I invited all family, all friends over, made a big dinner. And then, you know, the second that people start coming in was the first time that I ever thought, oh my gosh, what if I'm not going to pass this test? So they come over, and then after dinner, we could go online, I don't know, 7 o'clock, and enter in our user ID and our password, and it was going to come up if we had passed the bar or not. So I just wanted my grandpa there. It was just my grandpa and I. We went upstairs, and it makes me emotional every time I tell this story. It just putting in the information and seeing that I passed, him and I cried the ugliest tears, and everyone downstairs thought that I failed because here I am just sobbing and sobbing. And it was by far one of the best moments of my life. And being able to share that with my grandpa was absolutely incredible.
I love that story for so many reasons, but one of the highlights that stands out to me, and I want you to talk to this, is the fact that you planned this party, you had made a huge meal, invited all these people, and never once did it dawn on you up till that point that you might not pass. And what that speaks to is your mindset and your ability that you have in you to always succeed. Talk about where the mindset comes from, because that I love that. And if we can instill that in our kids, that's powerful.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes back to the shit shoveler deal. If you want to be an X, then you do whatever it takes to get X. You know, if you want to pass the California bar, you study your butt off. I didn't have a drop to drink. I didn't take a day off. I didn't do any of that. I was working for a judge my last year of law school, and I was talking to her, and she said, I was talking to her about my philosophy through law school about never missing a birthday party and all of this. Mm-hmm. And she said, and I said, so I think that that's how I'm going to be when I'm studying for the bar. And she said, okay, that's nice. It'll take you 2 or 3 times. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, you make it the worst time in your life. You study your butt off. You cut everything else off, all of this, so that you never have to go back and do it again. Mm-mm. And I think it's that attitude of doing whatever it takes that you just have to commit to and follow through. Now, that being said, I got engaged while studying for the bar, and, you know, so I did have a little bit of fun.
I love how you just slid that little tidbit in there. So tell me about that engagement to Donovan, because you two go back a few years.
We do. We met at what would eventually be our best man's 13th birthday party. And we, you know, thought each other was cute across the dance floor. But we dated our sophomore year, senior year of high school, a bit into college, last year of college. And then I started studying for the bar. He was still in party mode. So we separated our ways through that. And then my third year of law school, I'm sitting down and I opened my laptop getting ready to take notes for a class that I was in. And I check MySpace, and there was an email from him, and I slammed down my computer, and my friend sitting next to me said, what's that about? And I said, if I read that, I'm going to be engaged really soon.
Oh my gosh.
And she's like, what do you mean? I said, it's my ex-boyfriend. And I was kind of dating someone else and not really knowing if I was ready for all this, but yeah, we ended up back together and it was great.
I was right.
We ended up getting engaged very very shortly
How
after
How soon
that.
After that?
So I think that was October. And gosh, when did we... I don't even remember when we got engaged. That's horrible. I don't know, maybe
that's
8 months later.
I don't think most people can recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was short.
So that was how many years ago now?
2004, I believe.
Okay. So we'll go back a while, but I'm going to jump ahead and just say, as I mentioned in the introduction, you are now in business together. You work together. How does that work?
We are major gap fillers. So I am very comfortable talking to a group. And my husband, his background, he was a stock analyst for Smith Barney, loves numbers, an amazing researcher. So we both have our very distinct roles and we love working together.
Is that the key, having distinct roles?
Oh, absolutely.
Because?
Because, I mean, technically, with a business, you kind of assign yourself roles anyway. So if I'm CEO, I'm technically the boss of the company. Mm-hmm. And technically, that would be my husband's boss.
Yes.
So that doesn't work very well all the time, you know, and at home. So we very much had, this is your expectations. This is your lane. Stay away from mine a bit. And we got into it a little bit, mm-hmm. but we respect each other a ton. I think he's the most brilliant man in the world. And we learned how to make it work.
Over the years.
Over the years.
We'll dig into that more when we get into your company and how that all works together in terms of life as a family, because I know it serves you well. But let's go back to, you finished law school, but you never practiced in a firm.
No, never. So another thing that my dad had taught us was figure out something that you want to do with job-wise or business-wise, whatever, that you are making money when you're on vacation.
Wow.
So billable hours and firm and all that is definitely the antithesis. You know, yes. Someone's owning your time of what I was kind of raised to do.
So that's when you brought in your business mindset, and tell us where you started to work post law school.
So I never really went to traditional work. So Donovan and I started a day spa in Laguna Beach. And
why day spa?
You know, we analyzed different business models of franchises, and we thought it would be a really interesting, great career. Now, in reality, it was in Laguna Beach, and we would get massage therapists call us and say, my aura is off. I can't come in today. So we weren't really expecting those sort of mm-hmm. issues, you know, especially coming from law school and him coming from the stock market, right? Having to deal with that sort of thing.
You work all hours, all the time.
Yes.
Every day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But it was a great education always. And then during that, my dad, who had been retired for quite some time, came on as president of a company, of a startup company, and asked if I would help him with sales and do a little bit of their legal work. And we loved working together. So I ended up being their top salesperson, and it, one, made my dad want to get back in the game, and two, like, really taught us that we worked incredibly well side by side. So we decided to, there were a few little consulting projects in between, but we decided between my dad, Donovan, my husband, and I, that we would start a company called BKB Capital. And we would go to Las Vegas and to the auction steps and buy every foreclosed home that we could, starting in 2010, 2011. We had a month-old baby and moved overnight, like didn't even tell family and friends, didn't pack up our house. And the first house that we bought at the auction, we moved into. And kind of had a blast. We'd just show up with millions of dollars of cashier's checks every day. And I think the most that we bought in one day was 7 homes.
What?
So we bought hundreds of homes, flipped the ones with renter restrictions, mm-hmm. and we still have about 100 homes in that portfolio that we're still managing.
Goodness. How financially, if I can ask, does this work? How do you make money off that? And you're doing deals fast.
It was crazy. So we were buying homes that before everything crashed were selling for $400,000, some of them we were buying for $40,000, $50,000. You couldn't see inside. So it was a bit of a gamble. Mm-hmm. One home, we opened the door and in big, you know, graffiti writing all over the wall, it said, good luck finding the snakes.
Oh my God.
With terrariums trashed everywhere. We've had...
Did you look for the snakes?
Oh, I got the heck out of there. Oh, man.
Too.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I don't know what our crews found, but I wasn't sticking around to find out.
Okay. Did you flip that house right away?
No, we actually, I think we probably still own it.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've had concrete down the plumbing. We've opened the door to old meth labs, to old brothels.
Wow.
Yes. Crazy. The craziest that you can imagine going on in Las Vegas. But all in all, it was incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Were you renovating or just flipping?
So kind of both. These homes were not in great condition, mm-hmm. most of them. So we had our own construction crews. We still have warehouses and warehouses filled with our tile, our paint, our granite, you know, everything. So all of our BKB homes all look the same. We all have the same carpet in all of them. We have the same everything. The nicer homes that we would buy, we would do, you know, a great job. We'd have a designer come in and flip it. But the ones that we still have and keep as rental places...
100 still to this day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That must have been so much fun.
It's so much fun. So much fun. And the story still today, we have a woman who's our office manager and running everything there who is incredible and she has so much patience. And I tell her she needs to write a book. You should interview her on all of the stories that she gets with these crazy renters.
There must be so many.
Yes, it's really interesting.
I'll take down her name after the podcast.
She's phenomenal. But yeah, couldn't do it without her because we're not in Vegas anymore. But it's a lot of fun. And watching the market go up like crazy mm-hmm. has been a whole lot of fun.
Because it is soaring now. So yes. Like what a time to get into that business.
Yes.
It served you well.
It did.
It How do you go did. From buying and selling homes and renting them into a t-shirt company?
Well, again, we're shit shovelers.
I love this theme.
So... At the time, so we're in Vegas for 2.5 years and the foreclosed market starts, you know, they're all sold out. You mm-hmm. can't buy a home for what you used to be able to. And my dad comes up to Vegas and he says, so, you know, how are you doing? I said, I'm kind of bored. And by this time we had 2 babies and, you know, rent and all this. I don't know how exactly I was bored, but looking for something else. Oh, and he said, well, your brother came to me with an idea. And I told him that the only way he's getting my money is if we can talk you into running it. So the idea was my brother is from the outside, the polar opposite of me. In our core, we're very similar, but he is super tattooed and edgy and cool. And I'm like, you know, this mom CEO, you know, all this. So he's an artist.
I love
He's
how you said, I'm
artist.
Just a mom CEO, you know, are you kidding me? Anyway, but, I had to throw that
I
in
mean,
there.
It's like they're on like a cool factor could not be any
okay.
more different. Let's just start
Got
there.
It.
So he's tattooed from head to toe mm-hmm. and really a phenomenal artist. Trevor Friedrich is his name.
And well known around the world.
Yeah.
Let's give him the credit too. Did he not give Justin Bieber his first ever tattoo?
He did.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he is very, very high on the cool factor.
He is. He is very cool. He's great looking. And we would go everywhere. He was a touring musician at the time. And people would stop and be like, oh my gosh, are you Trevor Friedrich? And want to take pictures. And like, it would just bring tears to my eyes. I remember seeing him on stage the first time in a real venue and just sobbing. So proud of him.
Well, maybe I need to do a podcast with him too.
You should. You definitely should.
Yes.
And it's funny from, you know, in high school, he had a drum set in his room that was adjacent to mine. And I hated it more than anything.
It was loud.
Yes, yeah. It was horrible. To being super proud of him making a career out of it.
So, he was interrupting your proposal writing time.
Exactly. Gosh.
Okay.
I'm steady. So he had this idea. He knew a lot of people of great social media influence to where they would just be wearing any sort of t-shirt and get, you know, hundreds of comments, where do I buy this? Mm-hmm. So Trevor had the idea of taking people of social media influence, giving them their own website And then we would fulfill, print, fulfill, do all of their orders. So that's how we started. And that's how the Dream Junction started. It was a family business. We started it in my Uncle Paul's granite yard because he was wanting to have a career change as well. Aunt Julie was running the office and doing the books. Donovan was doing financials and websites. My dad was overseeing a bunch of stuff. I'm running it as CEO. And Trevor's bringing in all these people. So that was great, super fun. But we decided to pivot the company and focus more on large volume companies instead of just individual personalities.
Okay.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network. Or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
This is family business, and usually people say working with family can be extremely challenging. You said something earlier that really struck me. You said that your dad would do it, and he said to Trevor, if Blair is CEO. First of all, like, how does that make you feel knowing you have that incredible vote of confidence from your dad? It's like, we need the powerhouse CEO at the helm.
It's pretty amazing. You know, I mean, even for my dad, who I've looked up to my whole life, business-wise, and obviously in many other reasons, but for him to even have wanted to be a business partner of mine at first was mind-blowing and certainly a huge honor.
Okay, so you're leading this family business. What are the keys to making a family business work when you have that many different personalities and aunts and uncles involved in it?
Yeah, so above everything, we love each other. There were times in the past where sometimes we have to kind of remember that. And above everything, we're family. But we were seeing each other 6 days a week because mm-hmm. we'd be at work and then we'd on Sunday all go to church together. And we spent a lot of time together. I think, again, it's a testament to really having clear roles being very, very helpful because we all kind of stayed in our lane, did what we were supposed to do. But the biggest thing was, you know, we're family first and we love each other most over
wow.
anything.
Okay. So you now are producing t-shirts en masse. Tell me about that.
Yes. So we got our first large volume customer and we were doing all packaging so that it looked like it was coming from their business. And the first company that took a gamble on us is a company called Society Six. And at first, they're like, no one can know that you guys are printing for us. You know, this tiny little company, no one can know. And then everyone is kind of judged by how they do in holiday. So we killed it during holiday. We got all the orders out, everything on time. Then there's a trade show in January right next to us. The people that we had worked with at Society Six literally came to the trade show with all of our analytics, stood at our booth and told everyone what a great job we did. So it was really incredible and we owe a lot to them. So we just started kind of organically getting customers coming in because of that.
How quickly did it grow?
Very quickly. Very. I mean, we went from nothing to, I don't know, $20 million in revenue within a few years.
Oh my goodness. So word spread quickly and like who are some of your clients?
We can't say. I can say Society Six because, you know, they've made it more public. Mm-hmm. And since thankfully, we've sold the company. We sold it last June.
Okay. So since why? You said you went to $20 million in revenue.
Yeah.
And the reason you sold was?
Well, if I'm honest, it stopped being super fun. And we're all ready for a change. The world was changing. And COVID came. And we also had, while we're printing all of these shirts, we find out that we could make a better printer, you know, a couple of years in. So we start our own printer company.
Okay, that's way you threw that out there. So we start our own printer company. Like, I love how along the way in the journey, you're not white knuckling what is, but you continue to pivot and recognize these opportunities. Tell me about starting this printer company and like the why and what was the light bulb moment there?
Yeah. So we've always said like every single day we were going to treat our company like a startup. And if you're not disrupting, if you're not innovating, you're going to die. Mm-hmm. And especially in today's business climate, you have to constantly be bettering yourself, looking for better things to do, really. So there was only one large volume printer on the market. We were very successful with them. We actually went to New York and rang the stock market bell with them.
Stop.
Yes, we were, I think, their number two ink consumer. And I think that was, at the time, only second to a very, very, very large company that we all know. but so we actually came to them and said, if you guys did XYZ, the printers would really be amazing. And they didn't want to listen. So we weren't going to let that be a door closed in our face. So we went and sought out our own machine. And it took maybe two-ish years to get our first prototypes. And other companies started noticing. And our prints were better. It didn't smell like a lot of direct garment mm-hmm. prints do. And so they wanted to buy our machine. So that was kind of, you know, we started it for ourselves. And then we're like, well, this could be great because then we could be earning money off of all of our competitors,
right?
You know, as well, which did create a bit of conflict of interest because we have the printer company, the printing company. And so, you know, I kind of jokingly said it stopped being fun, but it was also time to pick one. You know, do you want to go the printer route or do you want to go the contract printing route?
And so?
So we sold the printing company to a great company that also added their products to our existing customers' lineup. So it ended up being a great fit. They still use all of our Ovaljet machines and still have our same staff and all that, which was super important to me. And have just really focused on the Ovaljet and getting that to market. So during COVID, you know, we sold in June, we sold the Dream Junction in last June. And then at the same time, I stepped down as CEO of 240 Tech, which is the Ovaljet. And my dad stepped in as CEO. So for the first time, I was around my kids all the time. Mm-hmm. I went from having a lot of help and not being with my kids or at least being very present with my kids very often to doing everything with them. And I fell in love. Really, I mean, I fell in love with my family.
Okay, I'm hitting the pause button right there. Everybody has to wait to find out what comes next. Because before we go into that family element of your story, I want to talk about being a female entrepreneur and some of the things that you brought to the table. And first of all, like, you're a lawyer, so you could do all the contracts yourself, correct?
I did. So I did all of our employee handbooks and negotiations, all of our contracts. I did not do anything that I was personally named on a lawsuit for or their company was sued for or anything like that. And I would not do our own patent work. So I would assist the patent attorneys, mm-hmm. but I did not do our patent work.
How well did that law degree serve you in your entrepreneurial journey?
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And just to be able to, I don't know, suss out some BS and have the background behind and the knowledge behind to be able to negotiate with some pretty heavy hitters mm-hmm. was invaluable.
So tell me about those heavy hitters and the rooms that you sat in. You said you never sat across from another female?
Not across from another female CEO, ever.
So what was that like going into these rooms and how did you hold your own?
So the rooms, going into the rooms, I would always be very optimistic. And a lot of the times I would just be sitting there and I'd always sit at the head of the boardroom table. Mm-hmm. And I would be looking at the back of males' heads the majority of the time. So I would have a file in my camera roll and I would just sit there and I would take pictures of the back of their heads. And I kind of wanted to be caught because then I would love for them to say, you know, oh, what are you doing? And I'd love to let them know that they hadn't been giving me the time of day, you know, through the entire meeting. But it was really interesting. And then luckily I had a group to send those to and to vent to. And I'd say, mm-hmm. oh, I've got another one. My female CEO group that understood more than anything, mm-hmm. you know, what it was like to be in that position.
But. So being in that position, were there ever interesting things that were said to you?
Oh, constantly. We were in negotiations for a long time with a Japanese company. And I've been told, why are you even working? You should just be on the beach with your kids. I was told by one of the guys who I had been talking back and forth, and I thought I had a great relationship with. He found out that I was an attorney and he came up to me and he said, I didn't know you were smart.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So
how did you handle these comments?
Just kind of laughed them off. And, you know, I don't think it would have done business-wise any good to really let them have it. But, you know, I would certainly try to hold my own. And my name being Blair can go male, female. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of times where I'd be emailing back and forth with someone, having a great connection, conversation. And then we would get on a phone call and they'd say, oh, I'm supposed to talk to Blair. Yes, this is she. And they'd all say, oh, well, I thought you were a male. No, not. So,
yeah. And then you'd flex those entrepreneurial
right.
muscles
yes.
and the knowledge and like blow the doors off.
Yeah. Yes, I'm a female. Ready to move on?
Yeah. Can we get down to business now?
Yes.
So tell me about your involvement in YPO and how that has served you. And just a bit more for people who don't know what Young President's Organization is.
So YPO is an incredible organization where it's either presidents or CEOs of companies that have, I don't know what it is today, maybe 15 million a year in revenue, over 2 million in payroll. I think you have to have at least 50 employees. There's different things that you have to meet depending on what industry you're mm-hmm. in. But it opens doors. It's not only just a networking across businesses, but it's also has a social component where there's forum and you get into a small group where it is no holds barred. You tell everything and you help each other work things out professionally, personally. So it really is an incredible organization. My dad, going back to my dad, was a member mm-hmm. of YPO, and we would go on trips, family trips around the world. And
because there are chapters around the world.
Yes, yes. It's very well represented around the world. And I just thought it was the coolest thing. So that was my biggest professional goal that, I was going to pass the bar, but also I was going to be CEO and own a company mm-hmm. that qualified for YPO.
So you did, and that networking helped you in many, how did it serve you?
So we haven't used the business connections probably as much, meaning I don't seek out, you know, apparel networks and try to get them to buy our products or whatever. What has helped me incredibly is the women aspect of it. And there's all these amazing female CEOs. And there's a little group of us that has now grown into hundreds of us around the world. And we'll get together a couple times a year. Mm-hmm. And when we're together, it's like, I can breathe. Like I've found my people. I found myself. And that has been incredibly valuable.
Why is that networking with them different than networking with male CEOs?
So, I mean, I've been in male forums and I've been in female forums. I love being in male forums because you can be like, okay, really? You can't say that to your wife, you know, or, you know, don't be such a jerk to your assistant or your daughter or whatever. But it was really the first time, like growing up, I have the best girlfriends and, you know, all this and being like a PTA mom and homeroom mom and, you know, all of this, I didn't feel like I fully fit. So I didn't fit in the MOPS group because, you know, I was running off to go negotiate a deal instead of going and getting coffee. I couldn't just like go on a walk with them after I had, you know, to deal with employee drama or whatever it was. So I'll never forget the first time that I went on a retreat with these women. It was at Terranea in California. And I just sobbed like the first time being with them. And they have the same issues of, you know, we've all heard of mom guilt and all that.
Yes.
But then you also have, you know, hundreds of employees that you're responsible for. Mm-hmm. And I took that very seriously, that their livelihood was entrusted with our family. And, you know, vendors and what are the cotton prices going to do? And is postage going to go up? And all of these issues. And then family dynamic issues. You know, I'm technically my dad's boss in that role and, you know, aunt and uncle's boss. And how do I navigate this? And there's things that it's such a weird niche position that it's not like I could just go to my neighbor and sit on her couch and talk about, you know, it's very different. So being with those women that were like me was crazy and amazing.
And so there are a lot of idea sharing, a lot of vulnerability, right?
Absolutely.
And that served you in so many ways because it helped you lead.
Absolutely.
So going back to that group, I mean, I want to stress that point because a lot of females search for their people and they don't know where to find them or the power of being in this group or any type of group. Your advice when you're walking that journey, no matter what?
Ooh, find your people, really, and figure out what stage you're in or what stage you want to be in. And find people in a similar situation. Don't get dragged down with petty little bitchy drama girl groups. You know, find the women that inspire you and challenge you and that you have a blast with and that you can be honest with. And when you're meeting people, don't do the little cocktail conversations. Get rid of the cocktail conversations. You know, talk about issues that are important to you and learn from each other and find a group that you can truly count on no matter what stage you're in. I'm in a completely different life stage right now than I was in 10 years ago. And I'm so thankful for a new mom group that I have now and women group that I have now. So I just think that it's so important.
How do females lead differently than men?
Ooh.
What is our superpowers in that area? Because I've read so many books and articles that we do bring a vastly different skill set to this table and that in many circumstances, we're more effective than them and vice versa. What have you learned over the years as a female leader?
I think multitasking is definitely a strength of a lot of women. I'm not going to say that, you know, men don't have it, but I've noticed that women definitely do. Being more compassionate, looking at the situation as a whole, maybe valuing people over profits in a lot of situations, just bringing a human side to it. And I wouldn't say, you know, this is definitely a female deal because there are some amazing men and there are some horrible women. But in general, working with a woman, I feel like the ones that I choose to work with that I like being around are more well-rounded. They have a better grasp on what needs to be done, whether socially conscious, economically conscious, just not so bottom line.
Thank you. Thank you for holding space for that question. I didn't want to compare, but I wanted perspective and I knew you would bring that to the table. In that regard, in terms of, so female leadership, the first thing you said is you're a multitasker. So in that spirit, Blair, while you were running these multi-million dollar companies and, you know, CEO of this family business, you also have littles of your own and you're being mom as well. So mom, CEO, how the heck did you balance it all? And what was your day like back then? And our listeners will understand, but when you were at the height of just everything going on, take us back then.
So it's funny. I would literally, I've had three children, three C-sections. My last two were scheduled around work and all this. So I would have a C-section on like Thursday and literally be back in the office on Monday.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I did not know this.
Yes. It's ridiculous. And I would do it so, so different today. But that's how I was back then. And I always had space for my babies. So I had a nursery, mm-hmm. you know, and especially with my daughter, she would come with us. I had help on top of help on top of help. So we had a nanny 55 hours a week. We've had live-ins. We've had full-time housekeepers. We've had assistants and, you know, all of this. And even that being said, when my daughter would come to work with us, my aunt, who is such a sweetheart, would take her, you know, most of the time. And they still to this day have the sweetest bond. But mm-hmm. I would for the most part do whatever I can to take my babies with me. And whether that I literally would be like nursing in the middle of meetings, nursing on the trade show floor, and which I kind of loved getting, you know, those looks because it's all men. But yeah, so our day would be when our kids were old enough for school, their school started really early. So I would take them to school in the morning, then go to work. Our nanny would come with us when Hartley was little enough to still be entertained in her nursery. Mm-hmm. And then she would leave, our nanny would leave with Hartley, go pick up the other two at school, do whatever homework. Our nanny helped with all of that. And then I would come back home at maybe 4 or 4:30. We'd do early dinner all together and that someone else would cook mm-hmm. and then put them to bed 5:30, 6. And then
early.
Yes. Our kids have always been really, really early to bed. Even now we have a 10-year-old and he likes going to bed early. But then back to work right after and schedule calls starting at 6:37.
And go all evening.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you said is you've always had help upon help upon help, but there was no shame attached to that. A lot, I don't want to overgeneralize, but women do carry guilt about, oh, I can do it all. I don't need that help. You had no trouble saying, I need the help perspective on that.
I don't know if it totally came without guilt. I remember the first time that when Cannon was maybe a month and a half, the first time our nanny came and she was holding him when I had to go into the office and I bawled and I just, why does she get to hold him all day and mm-hmm. I don't? And, but it's choices. So again, like going back to being raised, like you can choose your life however you want it to be. But if I want this big life and running big companies and, you know, all of this, something's got to give and I can't be at home with them and be at the office. And honestly, I don't think two littles, I don't think I would have been the best, most patient and, you know, all of that mom if I was just staying at home with them at that time. So I think it was just realizing, okay, this is the life that I want to lead. I want to travel a bunch and I want to run these companies and I want to have three kids and I want to be a great wife. So what am I going to do? And a lot of the things that I didn't love doing just kind of got outsourced.
Which is powerful because you made it work very successfully.
Mm-hmm.
So we hit the pause button on your story. Now we're going to go back where you said my life today from just over 2 years ago is vastly different. Pick up the story, Blair.
Yes. Yeah, so that's my favorite part of my story. So when we heard in California that schools were going to be closed for 3 weeks, I freaked out and I was like, what am I going to do with kids at home for 3 weeks? I never had, you know, still at that time we had nannies and housekeepers and, mm-hmm. you know, all this. And it was shelter in place. No one comes into our house. No one comes out. You know, it's like yes. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And so we're going to have to learn how to do all this. I didn't even know where things were in my kitchen because I wasn't the one that organized it. You know, I wasn't the homemaker. I wasn't the amazing mom. And I did a lot of things right. So I shouldn't say I wasn't an amazing mom. But
being hard on yourself.
Well, yes.
I get what you're saying.
But maybe like 2 weeks in, we start really learning our kids and kind of like getting the groove as a family and going on our family walks and to where I kind of hate to admit it, but it's a funny story. Donovan and I every day at noon would watch the governor would come on and give his little state of the state, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. when he would say, okay, you know, we're extending this 3 more weeks, we actually high-fived.
Did you really?
And as partners in our company, it was a tough deal to say like, no, we need to shut down. We need to, you know, not everyone agreed, but we completely shut down. All of our employees were home and it was magic. I remember being on Zoom calls and kind of in trying to work and do our leadership calls. And before, if one of my kids had come in to the picture, I would be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
And now it kind of like softened to where I'm leading this whole leadership meeting as my daughter is totally putting crowns on me and dressing me up. And I'm just sitting there mm-hmm. talking. And, you know, it's just that's how life was. So,
and similar for so many people, because we saw that all over like social media and regular where people were on Zoom calls and there was wild things happening in the background. That just became the normal.
Yeah.
You have to live and breathe over Zoom from home.
Yes.
So yeah. I love that you embraced that.
Oh, we loved it. And I got to do, you know, work with my kids and read with my kids and learn their learning styles. Mm-hmm. And they were going to a phenomenal school, a really small little private school in Orange County. And, you know, we'd see the work that would come home with them and we'd be like, I can kind of teach this better. You know, I can kind of do this better. Let's, you know, if Holden was struggling to learn something, well, but let me teach it to you a different way and see if that could work. So stepping down to be with the kids was the best, probably easiest decision we've ever made.
Wow. The easiest. Did yeah. you ever think you would say that out
never,
loud?
Never. If you told me that I would be, you know, I'm still running BKB and, you know, we're on leadership calls with Opaljet and all this, but primarily a stay-at-home mom and we don't have a nanny and all this, like there's zero chance I would have believed you 2 years ago, you know?
So today, what is life like? How much has changed in your life?
Oh, Lord. Okay, so we went from full lockdown in California to late May coming up to our home in Idaho. And life was very different in Idaho than it was in California. And there's kids that are all playing together and people smiling and hugging. And we decided maybe 3 weeks into last summer that we weren't going to go back to California. So we had a friend that was a realtor. We had him list our home. We hired a woman to organize and pack up our entire house. Never went back, ever. And we thought at first that we'd be in for an adventure year. Mm-hmm. So we thought we were just going to travel around. And, well, you can't go on very many adventures during COVID. So we decided to start in right around Dallas, Texas. And rented a home in Frisco, rented a home in Dallas. Neither place was, you know, where we wanted to buy a home and move to, but we absolutely fell in love with the area. So, and it didn't hurt that our like best friends were there too. And the woman who was our nanny for 5 years had moved to the area as well. And she now is like one of our best friends, you know, off of payroll and all this. So it felt like we were moving to family, you know, leaving a lot, certainly. But yeah, we fell in love with this tiny little town 20 minutes outside of Dallas. And we love it.
And that's home now.
It's home. So I'm like one house away from cows. And a mile away from horses. Oh, and we go to gymnastics every day and we get really excited to see the Longhorns. And it's like the best ever.
And you're homeschooling your kids.
Yes.
What?
So virtual learning wasn't the best. Putting them in front of a computer didn't do well. The family who I was mentioning that we love so much in Dallas, they have 10 kids. And the mom who is an earthly angel has homeschooled all of them. And she was amazing. And I was so nervous. And she said, Blair, if you read to them every day and just do life with them every day for a year, they're going to still learn more. And don't worry about making everything perfect and all this, which isn't really my personality, just kind of let things go. So I didn't quite do it like that. I bought every curriculum that I could find and I did a ton of research and went through and I'm like, okay, this language program will be awesome for Holden because of this. This will be great for Hartley because of this, and just kind of pieced together our own deal and figured out what we wanted our kids to know. So like, yeah, they're going to learn about our P&Ls for our business and they're going to go on wild field trips and do crazy things and interview people that are really interesting. And it's been incredible. So we actually paid for standardized testing because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't totally messing them up. And they're like light years ahead. And now it's kind of like, well, great. What do we do? So we're going to keep doing it this year and just kind of re-examine as we go.
On the happiness scale, where are you right now in life?
Off the charts. I miss family and friends in California. I haven't seen my grandmother. That's really difficult. Mm. She isn't the best traveler. So we're going to go back and see her. But besides that, it's like when we bought our house, I literally would have nightmares that someone came to me and said, you need to go back. You can't live here anymore. You need to go back. And even, you know, at our home in Idaho over the summer, usually I'm sobbing when we're leaving. And I'm like, okay, almost ready to go back. Like the people that we've met are incredible. I have a new mom group there, new women's group. And it's funny because I got introduced to a woman who is part of this group and she said, okay, yeah, it's this club and you just have to make sure that you, I think they said qualify. It's not that like serious of a club, but the first thing was, are you a stay-at-home mom? And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so intimidating to me. Like, but yes, I guess now I'm checking the box of a stay-at-home mom. So that was super intimidating. It was like, I thought I was being fed to the wolves the first time that I went.
Why was it intimidating?
Because I thought that these women were going to be nothing like me. Like, what do I have in common with these women? And I went. They are the nicest, most welcoming, so fun, amazing group of women. I'm so, so thankful. They really make Texas feel like home. And even now when I'm not around them a ton, we're texting and, you know, excited to see them. So.
Okay. So you are CEO, a lawyer, and now a stay-at-home mom. How does it feel to say, if someone asks you, I'm a stay-at-home mom?
At first I was like, you know, okay, how am I going to introduce myself? Or what if someone says, well, what do you do?
Yes.
And I kind of love it just being like, oh, I just stay at home. I homeschool. Like, I kind of love it. And there's so much more to our story.
Yes, that's what's just, I laugh as if there's so many layers, as we've all discovered listening to you.
during this conversation.
Yeah, but it's fun to be able to kind of fit into all the roles. I read this quote a couple of weeks ago that just said, like, I'm too big to fit in a box. And I love that.
That's powerful.
Yeah, so I can be a stay-at-home mom, but then I can also Tuesday mornings be on my business call. And
you can have it all.
Yeah.
And you are having it all right now, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. And it's a fun season. I don't know how long it's going to last. We've done, I think we did 5, maybe 6 startups in 10 years. So it's kind of nice to not have that pressure every day. You know, I used to wake up and be like, you know, have to kind of grasp, and I would do my blood work at annual physicals, and they'd be like, your adrenals are shot, you are stressed through the roof. And now my doctor's like, whatever you're doing is just so good with your body. I'm like, oh, that's so nice to hear. But we're all in a really good place.
I want to ask you this as we close off this conversation. What in you did you honor to be able to walk this most recent path and make these monumental changes, because they are monumental? So often our tuition, I say, well, tell us something, and then we squash it, and then it gets louder and we squash it, and it starts yelling at us. And a lot of times it doesn't stop till we listen. But what did you honor inside of you to be able to make these changes? Because I know so many women that want to, but they're blocked because of fear, because of uncertainty, because of a whole list of things. What did you listen to? What led you down this path?
I think if there's something nudging you, just listen. In one of my YPO forums, there was a man who was so scared of losing everything. So as an exercise, we all went through and said, okay, literally tomorrow your house burns down, your business goes bankrupt, what does your life look like? And okay, what's the absolute worst thing? And then when you think about, well, I have a great support system. At worst, I could live with my friend or live with, you know, whatever. And well, I guess my kid wouldn't go to that prestigious private school, but the school system next to us is phenomenal anyway. And maybe we're not going to Hawaii 5 times a year, but we're going to the beach. Or, you know, if you figure out like what is the worst thing that could happen if you make a bad decision, and then realize that, one, the worst is never going to, you know, the absolute worst is never going to happen. But why not? What if you fail? My mom gave me this thing that it said, but what if I fall? And it said, it's something like, but oh, my darling, what if you succeed?
Yes.
You know, and it's like, just who cares? First of all, stop comparing yourself to friends next door and whatever, because there are failures and some businesses aren't going to make it and whatever. Okay, figure out something else. Don't worry about what, I don't know, someone next door is going to think if your kids aren't in school next year or whatever. I don't know. It's just, don't be afraid to fail and just go.
Be afraid not to try.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd so much, like any sort of regret that I want to have, you know, years and years and years down, would be, you know, I don't know, I would be so sad if it was that I hadn't tried it. And if I fail, okay, well, I'll try someone else. I'm going to be successful at something else. But to not even try, that's a failure.
Agreed. 1,000,000%. And with that powerful thought, I express my deepest gratitude to you. I know this conversation is going to impact anyone that listens. It will inspire them to just try and to never give up and to listen to that intuition and let it guide you, because your path is extraordinary. And I love where you are today. And I can't wait to revisit in a few years, because you know, there will have to be a follow-up podcast to this and find out where you have gone. But in this very moment, I express my gratitude to you for trusting me with your story and your journey and for your friendship, Blair.
Thank you. I appreciate this. This is great.
Thank you for stepping into the inner circle today.
Thanks for having me.
I want to end today by extending my gratitude to you for listening. You know, time is our most precious commodity. We don't have enough of it most days. So I am so grateful that you shared some of your precious time with me. Thank you so much. For show notes and links to our guests and everything we talked about today, you can head to my website, carriedoll.co. That is CarrieDoll.co. Once you're there, you can find links to Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up for my newsletters and get information on my public speaking courses. I want to empower women and people everywhere to use their voice, to invest in themselves, and to be comfortable anytime, anywhere, giving a powerful, unforgettable speech. Come with me. Join the movement of the Inner Circle. Let's go on this journey together.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
Looking to make the most out of this life and optimize your personal wellness? Then check out the Natural Man Podcast. Join me, host Mike C, as we explore all areas of human wellness, physical, mental, and emotional. Learn strategies to optimize your own well-being and be in the driver's seat of your own health. Remember, your doctor works for you. Learn biohacks, neurohacks, ways to improve sleep, and ways to optimize your body and your mind. Check us out on Apple, Spotify, the Fountain app, and at naturalmanpodcast.com.